Oh, we got a ding to start off.
Oh, that's good. That's how we know. That's the clack. Here we go.
That's correct.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Well, we've warmed up.
Tyrell, I finally got moved out to the woods again.
Did you? Which woods?
My woods.
You're in your woods?
Yeah.
We're like cousins now.
I know.
I'm excited.
Yeah, me too.
I'm about to come hang out.
Yeah.
We'll chop some wood.
We've we'll seriously have y'all out sometime to we've got a Blackstone grill and we've cooked out for the family a while back. It's a good time.
Yeah, that's good. You know what a good friend of mine that actually Tyrell knows him as well, what they do instead of French fries with their hamburgers is they do their burgers first on the Blackstone and then they throw breakfast potatoes. What do you call those? Hash browns.
Hash browns.
They throw hash browns on afterwards, and they just have extra hash browns for everybody to grab.
That's nice.
And it's probably the best food hack that I've seen in like 6 months. I love it.
It's crazy, like how many things the Blackstone makes good like that. It'll taste, you know, like Waffle House, but
yes,
know, better.
I immediately thought of Waffle House when you mentioned that hash brown hack. Yeah. I was like, oh, having a burger at Waffle House. Mm. I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I hadn't thought of it like that, but it's a good idea. And so is Waffle House. And, you know.
That's what they do. Yeah.
IMHO.
Everything on a griddle.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's good stuff. So, well, you moved out to the woods. So this is the life update portion. Oh, it's the life update portion where we say,
yeah,
that's Alan.
Yeah, I live in the woods.
He lives in the woods.
I was born in the woods. I'm back to the woods.
We are joined by Tyrell.
Hey,
coming back from to Lofty
back
for
from
a
the woods
podcast. I guess. Yeah, back from the woods to Lofty, and then Joseph back here. I'm actually in the chair recording the podcast using the board this time. Alan wouldn't let me get away with asking someone else to do it.
You know, he won't learn that way.
That's right. We'll learn. Learning is important. So
teach a man to fish.
That's, yep. That's right. And look at him fishing here.
Teach
He's
going to
get a hook stuck in his ear.
Careful.
Teach a man to get stuck in the board in an alternate universe type scenario for us.
These ones don't know about the Philip K. Dick.
I know.
Reference.
I was going to try and make an Ant-Man joke just to really throw everybody off.
Oh, I'm sorry. I ruined that.
No, it's okay. It didn't develop. Like the idea surfaced and then it shrank just
idea.
Like Ant-Man did.
Gotcha.
It went away.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, we were just talking about hooks. That's a hook. If you want to know, it's over on the Patreon app become a patron, as it were. Mm. And you would get to learn all about Philip K. Dick and
etymology.
Ooh, etymology. Yes, etymology.
That's right.
Some Spanish etymology.
That's right. Spanish etymology. I forgot. We
That's all you
we
get. Don't.
We went all over the world, though. Yeah. We were Same. Over the Misty Mountains and under the Moria and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, the Babbling Brook. And
I know.
I don't know.
You don't have one thinking?
I've got stuck on Misty Mountain Hop and just never left.
Misty Mountain Hop. I don't even know about.
I think that's a Led Zeppelin song, or am I just way off?
No.
If you ask me about classic rock, you know why you're not going to get the right answer.
That's where I'm afraid I have mixed like a little bluegrass in there, maybe even. I'm like, you mean Foggy Mountain Breakdown?
And I may just be completely
off. Yeah, Misty Mountain Hop. Yeah, Led Zeppelin. It's obviously not. You know, it's not as known as Stairway to Heaven and things like that. That's why I thought it was a real song and one that I like.
We have officially offended the less Led Zeppelin fans by saying, I can't believe you didn't know, and those that aren't by making them feel like we should have known. So,
well, I grew up listening to C101, our classic rock station, and every weeknight at 8 o'clock they had Get the Lead Out, which was a guaranteed.
That's awesome.
Two, I think, Led Zeppelin songs.
Okay.
Two Led Zeppelin songs at 8 o'clock every night. And then they had one for Pink Floyd, and I don't remember what it was. And then there was more Metallica, which was another one. And so, like, I think it was, like, 7, 8, and 9. It was, like, Metallica, Led Zepp, Pink Floyd.
Nice. Mm. Nice.
Mm-hmm. Quite a combination in there.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't allowed to listen to, you know, so much music. I think we talked about that on one of the recent podcasts as well.
I think the last one,
yeah.
It won't be out yet, but they'll
but they'll
learn about Joseph's upbringing.
But by the time they hear this, they'll have already learned about it if they listen to the last one.
That's true.
It's wild.
Yeah. Time is a flat circle.
Yeah. The time doesn't exist. You know, time isn't the same for me as it is for everyone else, right, Alex?
Words aren't meant to be read, Joseph.
So I revisit.
Yeah, go for it. Please do.
No, because I was going to make an allusion to the thing that I had said that no one else recognized, and I was just like, well, that's awful, like, dumb. But, hey, y'all didn't hear me make that movie quote. I'm going to talk about that movie
now. Let's get
now.
Back to that. But hey, you know what? If you want to do that for the Shine.
I don't.
Twain.
Oh, what?
You know.
I feel like a woman.
And
still the one.
We're still the one. My God. So... Misty Mountains was also making me think of Wheel of Time. I've started to listen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah. I know,
right?
That's... How much time do you have?
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
Triple exit.
Yeah.
Can they do 3X on those?
I got the thing that you had, you know, you recommended talked about. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Now I just need time.
Wait. You'll have to tell me.
We'll tell you about that.
No. I don't think it's. Maybe I'm afraid they're gonna take it down.
Tell me later.
Have either of you watched? Oh wait.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I was gonna talk about watching, but you were talking about listening.
Well, I watched the first two seasons.
I figured that's how we.
Oh, you've already gotten through the second season.
That's what we're doing here. Yeah.
I'm a couple episodes in the second season.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. No. Don't. Yeah. No.
So won't say much. But I have you read. You didn't read them,
I read
right?
the first one.
Oh, you did.
And then
okay.
I was just like, I really enjoyed that. I don't have space for that in my life.
Right. Yeah.
I see. I read the New Spring, which was the prologue.
The prequel one of Rain.
Yeah. And same kind of thing. I enjoyed it, but I was like, I just don't really have the time for that. And then they condensed it on Amazon. I was like, this is my chance to jump on this train now.
Correct. Yeah. So that book taught me so much, that book series, not having read it at all, but having had experience with it through others, taught me so much about fantasy fiction because everyone talked about Robert Jordan not finishing and supposed to have finished and all these things and brought in along a helper and
then basically fired him and said,
you're no good. And it's like,
a lot of people would disagree with that.
You don't get a choice in that matter anymore. Sorry. That's the thing about art. When it's in the public domain, you no longer own it. That's what it is. That's by nature what art is. Maybe it's not. I don't know. Maybe I just said something that's totally dumb for artists. But moving right along.
I don't have to explain my art to you, man.
That's right. Do you remember the This Is Art big...
Did I remember it?
Yeah.
It hung in my living room.
I know. It was my living room first.
That's fair.
Oh, man. But
Was it in there when it was your living room?
I don't know. It did take him years to complete that thing. Hmm. It did take him a long time. He had that as an empty canvas for a long time. It could have actually just been an empty canvas.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, which is literally everybody but me and Joseph.
And one other person who have never listened to this podcast.
I was
going to
say, and maybe the other guy. But yeah.
Backstory, Joseph and I shared a roommate in succession. In other words,
I got him on one weekend, so he got him another weekend.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
We shared.
It's great. Yeah, you guys kept that relationship going.
Yeah, yeah. He was really happy.
Important.
He got
it's important for the roommate.
It was hard at first, but he got two Christmases, so he's all right with it. We Joseph moved out. And I moved in with a mutual friend of ours. And one of the things he did was, and like I say, this fueled it. I think he just gave up and did this. He had this giant canvas that he was just like, one day I'm going to make art on this. Mm. And he didn't and didn't and didn't and didn't. And eventually what he did with it was he wrote the word art on it.
Mm. In stencil, right?
Stencil, the word art on it. And then hung it on the wall, but painted the wall all around it.
Oh, wow.
So you could probably get away with that in Crystal Bridges in that modern art wing, not gonna lie.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But it did require painting a giant patch of an apartment complex's wall.
He
was committed to the bit. That's an installation piece. I'm committed to my art. I will not get my deposit back, and I really hope my landlord never sees it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they did, of course.
They did. Yeah.
I think that's why that piece happened the way it did, because he's just like, I don't have
Well, that's the thing. He had it in that in his room for a long time, and he kept talking about, like, I'm going to. And he actually did come up with that exact idea while I was still living there. And that's why I was like, yeah, I think that sounds... You know, this was him listening to... this was during the time when he was listening to a lot of Ani DeFranco, which... is my influence for Ani DeFranco, and he's the reason why I watched the movie High Art, which was a lot about this constant battle between high art and populist art. Mm. It informed a lot of my ideas, including the one that I just espoused very, very opinionatedly about how art, once it's given to the public forum, is no longer yours. Mm. And so that was that's where the reference comes from. That's where I got a lot of my influence. Once you have given a 13-book or 14-book series to the public, you don't get to take it back.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
And
it's a good one, I think.
Yeah.
But they also have a Misty Mountains, I believe. And it's not until this so I said he influenced...
You're saying there's Misty Mountains in
Wheel of Time? Yeah.
I think. That's the thing. I can't remember.
It's hard to say because it's so much and it spans multiple... Yeah,
good luck with that.
Yeah, the wheel turns.
As the wheel turns. So but that's the thing that's interesting to me about it is another way that it's influenced me is that I, of course, read the Tolkien trilogy when I was young, but it was the first kind of fantasy that I really read. Mm. And everyone said, like, nothing compares. It is the best.
Mountains of Mist.
Okay, good. There you go.
You could say they're misty mountains.
Mountains. But everyone said, yeah, nothing compares. It's the best. Tolkien's the best. You know, and I was like, and it, you know, genre defining and all this stuff. But
I mean, is the Model T the best car ever?
That's the thing, right?
Like, ever made?
Well, that's the way I felt until I'm reading this and going, like, oh, there's just so much of this that has been... is so similar, it's hard to not recognize the influence, which is also fair, but my other favorite
one, I love it, don't get me wrong,
as of recent has been the win what is the trilogy, Patrick Rothfuss, did you
dude, really,
it's man, so good.
Only me and my wife and maybe one of the kids have read that.
Oh, so
good. And we're waiting for the third one.
That we will never get. It is,
confident. I have a theory. Like, Patrick, I get it too, buddy. It's tough, all that and everything. I know he's, you know, I think he's got some battles with ADHD and everything, which my wife has, and that does screw things up and all that. But my theory, though, is like, if we never get that book, I consider that to be the third silence. Because, like, he starts each book with, you know, it's a silence of three parts.
You know what?
And then describes what it is. And the third one, I got to thinking one day, because I've read those twice, at least even. Like, it's so good, the depth and the layering and all that.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah. It just hit me one day. I was like, man, if we never get one, that could be the third silence.
Yeah, I like that. I like it. You don't know.
Actually do know what you're talking about, but I've not read it. I wouldn't have known the book series if had you just given the author's name. Mm. But like giving the context around it, I'm just like, oh yeah, I've heard a lot of people complain about that
because it's very polarizing.
Like, I don't want to get Wheel of Timed. Oh no.
Yeah. That one. Yeah. So that's the one that killed me because I didn't want to get Wheel of Timed when so before I read the first one, I looked up and it said that the third one was going to be released that later that year. And I was like, awesome.
Yeah, what was that, 10 years ago?
And then I read
looks at Wikipedia history and like,
and then I read the Reddit forums that were like, hey, don't get tricked by this. They do it every year. And I was like, No, I was smart enough to Oh, man. So, I mean, if I ever see him, I'll tell him he's a bad human and a great author. And then I'll be done. I'll feel good.
Do you think he or the publishing company is sitting on an unpublished copy, kind of like the rich dude that went to jail for the Pharma Bro with the Wu-Tang Clan album? Do you think somebody's just got that sitting around?
Got that just sitting around.
Just waiting? till till they can make bank off of it. Or they get arrested and they leak it across the internet in some sort of weird protest.
No way. No way that that happens in today's world. My personal opinion is that, and of course, you know, we all get our own theories. This is fun. My personal opinion is that he started out with it. I don't know about the third silence. That's way deeper than I'd gotten to it. But I think he started out with this as an expectation. He took 10 years to write the first one, and he was like, it's going to take forever to get to the third one. And he just literally thought, you know, what happens if I don't ever write it? Will I? How long can I keep the fame and the notoriety and get what I believe I deserve out of giving myself to this?
I think that could be it. I'm afraid that like the truth is even harder than that, and it's just like that third one's real hard to write.
It's fair
because it's real easy to go to think of a story, you know, like we're all in the tavern, and then you know, stuff happens, and it's easy to start a story. It's it's hard to finish it.
That's, someone's a DM.
He is.
We're all started. So here we are in this tavern. No idea why we're here. Just like, I know. Many a campaign have started that way.
Indeed. Yeah.
Okay. We have opined on many things. But we didn't actually even get an update, Tyrell, on. So, you know, the starting point is kind of differences, custom software. I'm intrigued. You made some commentary either on this or on the earlier Patreon content that maybe not using Lambdas, but using Azure.
Azure Compute.
Oh, yeah.
But my kind of question, as our introductory content, 16 minutes in, is how...
It's like a Wheel of Time podcast.
That's right, it is. It wheels as it wheels.
Alan's our Aes Sedai.
He's definitely the only one with those kinds of powers in this room. Mm-hmm. What?
I can't even, and I can't lie either.
I guess technically he would be
I try not to.
Dragon Reborn.
He'd be I've only gotten into one book, so who knows?
Oh, yeah. There's from a similar source. I found like a thing that is kind of like it's basically an ancient writing that goes and tells some of that, which I thought was really interesting, filled in a lot of gaps right away.
Interesting.
Yeah, how the Dark One tainted the source for males, and that was a part of his strategy.
Yes, yeah.
You're saying this was like actual ancient writing that you think Robert Jordan borrowed
from? No. It's something Robert Jordan made
it's
up.
Fiction written as an ancient source
The world. I got you. Yeah. Oh, I see what you did now. It took me a minute. I thought you were referencing, because like, Tolkien stole a bunch of stuff from Old Norse mythology, and so I thought, like, oh, did we find where some of Wheel of Fortune,
Wheel of Fortune,
Robert Jordan's source material?
No. But it was like the Silmarillion, basically. Yeah. That explained some of it. Yeah, no, much shorter though.
I just get tired anytime someone says the Silmarillion. Instantly, just like every ounce of energy leaves me. Yeah.
No, that's
as if I've tried to read it again.
I've never read that cover to cover, but I enjoy parts that I read. You know, when I pick it up sometimes and look at a thing, and then I kind of realize like, oh, you know, I didn't realize.
I think that the Amazon series is actually the best media format for that particular piece of art.
I enjoyed that quite a bit.
It's good.
Yeah.
I think of the Silmarillion like a history textbook.
Yes.
And like, you don't read a history textbook cover to cover.
Right.
You
just kind of
like drop in on like, oh, what was this entry like? Yeah. You got to drop in there.
What was Sauron like in the early days? And stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, where are you in the tech weeds in your your current rendition?
Where am I in the tech weeds in my current rendition? I'm not in the direct weeds very much as far as like writing software. I did some during our hackathon this quarter, which was fun, though it just reminded me how out of touch I was, particularly with React Native. I was writing some React Native code.
I've been out of that loop for a long time, and I'm happy about it.
The options for me were React Native or Java, and I knew that it would be even more of a climb for me to jump into the Java. Oh,
gotcha.
And so I opted for React Native, and it was good. But kind of looking at so I'm not in the weeds very much, but I have a hand in a lot of decision making. So I'm aware and abreast of a lot of things, even though I don't get to have the actual like hands-on learning of it. And I've just got folks that I trust that are experts in those areas. And
right.
So I'm kind of, I have a hand in making decisions around what technologies we use, what frameworks we use, what things we adopt, what processes we have. And so in that sense, I would be tied to it, but not directly. Like I'm not writing functions that are going to be deployed to Azure Compute or anything like that.
Right, which I wouldn't have expected. Yeah, no. But how would you say? So, Peril, that's kind of my that was my question on this whole topic around tech is you know just about people's disappointment.
I get disappointed by tech a lot. If that's the question,
that's a good answer.
I mean, all I have everywhere, time. So it's not like current to my current job. It's right, just like right, ever right. since I've touched the computer and figured out how they work, I've been like, oh.
Did we?
What can I do with this? Oh,
yeah. That's and getting used.
I've often described it as I go back and forth between feeling like God and the village idiot, like just back and forth, just diachronic.
You know, just, yeah.
I could do anything. I can't do one thing.
Yeah.
I don't even know what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
They're going to find me drunk in the town square and throw me in the jail now.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay.
So it was an Applebee's.
An Applebee's, that's fair. I mean, I think that if you go to an Applebee's, you should be thrown into. Yeah. Listen, I can opine on Waffle House, but Applebee's
is a bridge too far.
Yeah. I didn't get the experience, right? I don't even have the nostalgia to weigh me to drop the scale.
I remember
on
chicken
the
finger
side.
Baskets, yeah. But they're, you know.
He's Chili's man, then. Chili's man.
Like an Chili's, onion blossom.
Chili's not bad. You know what it's probably it actually is that it's probably just Dairy Queen. That's probably what it is. And that's it's just because of their saving grace of the peanut butter parfait. Mm. You know?
Oh. Mm.
Those things. Mm. They're winners.
I do like a parfait.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, this serverless compute, that's where that's the where the question originated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're using some Lambdas.
Yeah, we're using them in a data pre-processing pipeline. So we're triggering a Lambda as files are coming in.
Gotcha.
Like lots of files, thousands of files, back to back.
And so you're doing that for scalability and cost savings?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Gotcha. And and probably even at this point, kind of modularization, some composition into it of just being able to go, and now that lives over there.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and then, some of it is
and can scale like to 1,000. You know, that's the biggest thing that's kind of mind blowing.
But I will say, you know, even organization. We talked about this a little bit last time, just that, or maybe two times ago, Casey and I were talking about just when it comes to the data science pipelines, the fact that. When the file arrives, if it can be processed quickly, it can also be organized quickly, right? Mm-hmm. And that actually means a lot to us because then we can store information at a database level versus on a data science side, there's oftentimes can we output as X thing and then use that output to do another thing versus now it's all just database and you just use that to trigger the outputs you need and... So there's this organization level inside of the bucket where we don't have to multiply the data 15 times.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Write files all over the place, duplicate files, and you know, and you get a source of truth kind of in there too,
exactly.
as it were. You know the.
And I would imagine in the because you're doing logistics and carrier stuff, that probably the compute, the real time compute there, that the value. I guess would just be in like real time data for the logistics type things. Is that right? Or is that, that's what I would imagine is that you need, I don't know, reporting on where and how of things
quick-like.
So we're really heavily involved in like event driven software at this point because there are so many different pieces and data moving from so many places and we're consuming stuff. And so, like you've got your data sources that are like your pure data sources, and then you've got all of these pockets where you've enriched and you're bringing stuff forward and you're enriching it from other places and putting it over an Elastic instance or a Redis instance or whatever. And and all of that is getting warmed and updated by events. So we use Kafka for our eventing tool of choice. And so we're watching Kafka streams and then like firing off events as those listeners see things happen. And so that like that's the real-time nature of it. And then we're using those Azure Compute functions minimally because we're largely in Kubernetes, and so like everything's got auto scaling and so that allows us to own the infrastructure, scale the infrastructure as needed, and kind of make things robust and a little more affordable. But there's huge benefit in if we were just relying on I would say the reason we use those less is because we have so much invested in our architecture and our teams of architectures, our site reliability engineers and the people that are running our DevOps pipelines and all of that kind of stuff. Like we have been able to invest so much that we don't have to go with the more, the piece that requires less resource. Like you spend the money either way. Do I spend this money on someone else doing this work for me? Or do I spend this money on someone doing this work for me internally to enable that? And so like for us, because of the size of the company and all that was going on, those kinds of problems can be solved with the tools that we get through like Kubernetes and deploying everything in Docker images and scaling and things like that. Whereas like if we didn't have that kind of resource and we weren't deployed in Kubernetes or things of that nature, like there'd be tremendous benefit in having the ability to just like ad hoc compute stuff, ad hoc mutate things or update things and run those through those lambdas for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that might even speak to the problem statement that I had around that I was making around tech being driven by disappointment of the trade-off for speed of release versus reliability or consistency or reproducibility, in that when your entity has the resources to invest in a particular way, you get to be more strategic in your decision making and say like, now we are just going to decide to do it this way.
Get to be doesn't mean you are. Man. I'll just throw that out there. But yes, I hear.
Yeah. And then maybe you're not driven as much by the winds of, but we can get it quicker over here by this thing, right? Mm. And you also have the ability to bring in more composed and developed decision makers who can actually say, hey, this yes, we see the value of that thing, but also been doing this for 20 years and I have this experience to tell you that this is another way we can do that and it doesn't cost us having to switch software product, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So,
you know, I think oftentimes the right tool for the right job. The problem is figuring out what the right tool is, right?
That's sometimes true.
And that's kind of like to your point, I think there's a time there's a time for everything, right? Like so there's a time for a low code solution, you know, and then there's a time to fully customize the software, you know.
Right.
And I think there's a time to reach to something like, you know, the serverless cloud computing, whatever that solution is, and a time to reach for Kubernetes and things like that. So like one of the things about Lambdas in particular, and I imagine Azure is probably the same, it's like the pricing model encourages you to run 1,000 as quick as possible.
Yeah.
And so if you've got something that you need to scale up to 1,000 and potentially process that really quickly and then scale down and idle for the rest of the day, that's a really good solution.
Right, right.
But like to run something that you could run on the Kubernetes cluster, just to have your back end running in there and idling the whole time, terrible. Right. You are going to go bankrupt running certain things in a Lambda, you know.
Yeah.
I need all those nodes just sitting there ready.
Yeah, yeah, just all time, warm them up, just in case, you know. Yeah, Yeah. So it's, but that's the challenge, right? It's easy to say right tool for the right job, but what is the right tool sometimes? I guess that's in, you know, kind of to your point with like industry knowledge and stuff like that. A lot of that's just how much knowledge you have around the problem base.
Right. Right. So again, you have the benefit of having an entity that has the ability to draw on that knowledge by having a staff that mm-hmm. has that type of knowledge and can have a discussion about it. And what you said can make more efficient decisions, Tyrell. I think that that speaks to the other side of the equation, which is you might have all of that knowledge, but can you get them to work together?
That's a fun one. I think to Alan's point about it, right tool, right job. I think that's a huge thing that kind of gets lost on a regular basis. Mm. When a technology really gets momentum, mm-hmm. you got a great hammer, so everything's a nail. Mm-hmm. And
he's got a great hammer too. I need that hammer.
Yeah. Oh, that's a better hammer.
Yeah.
And so you're like chasing stuff, and then at the same time, like there's always like when stuff. So like there's the side of that on the engineer who's got all these new tools to learn to use. And then there's the side of it on like the low code, no code side that you're talking about that gets everybody scared to just like, well, they're coming for our jobs. Robots are taking our jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, but actually those things should be thought of as multipliers and like efficiency drivers for engineers.
Yeah,
so
yes,
using low code tools, like that's great. That's going to get us somewhere quickly and allow the engineer to focus on the harder problem that's not solved by a low code solution.
Yes.
Same with like using generative AI to solve software problems. Like generative AI is not going to write all of our software for us going on. Like
it's not
gonna
solve like, those hard problems.
Yeah, we're not moving into a world where everything's a Quine. We're just we're dealing with like how can we use generative AI to make ourselves more efficient. So it's it's like we don't need to create super soldiers in the sense of like robots. We should make exoskeletons for our current soldiers and turn them all into
Iron Man,
the Space Marines from Halo or Iron Man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that makes
not or like Starship Iron Man, Troopers.
Or Starship Troopers. Oh, man.
Mm. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
I haven't seen that in a little bit.
It's been a while. Mm. So yeah, like finding ways to use those kind of tools for efficiency and not just use them because they're available is key. But that disappointment, like you talk about like disappoint, I'll say it as disappointment driven development. Like I think.
Oh, that may be the title right there.
I was
going
to say, we just came up with it. There's another one. We've got too many titles for this one, but that's nice because it's D squared, you know, disappointment driven development. You got the D squared.
Exactly. That's a like, good one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a real thing. Hmm. And I think it's a lot of times it's, everybody runs into a problem that they like, take a personal offense to. Like I would say software engineers especially. Mm. Like they'll have a grievance and they hate this thing. Mm-hmm. And someone will eventually make it their passion project to overcome that. Yeah. And so like it's disappointment for one. It's like rage that generates the tool.
Right.
And then the disappointment of all the others who have tried to exist in a world without it that drive them toward that. And then like there's just this mass adoption of the thing that happens. And so, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that happens based on kind of like, how do we get it faster?
Right.
How do we reduce friction? How do we move quicker? And the whole industry just churns on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and the whole time you're socializing new individuals into the industry at a rate that's really not sustainable because by nature, technology always fire by rubbing sticks together has such high benefits that it draws more people to it than other industries do. Mm. And so because of that, it draws people to it because the benefit is higher. And then when that happens, they're getting socialized into this is the way that it's done, which would include things like new tool, go adopt. Mm. When there's not this foundational training set around what you really want out of the ones that have made it through to the senior level position where they go, actually, we don't need to adopt it just because it's a new tool. We don't need to have AI integrated into every single tool. It's like, come Zoom, could you just fix us sharing more than one screen at a time instead of putting AI in here? Because that's what I'd really rather have.
maybe two of us being able to share a screen at the same time. Figure out how to do that. I might actually want to pay for Zoom then instead of jumping wholesale to Google Meet, because guess what? They can share screens two at a time.
They figured it out over there.
Yeah, but instead I have a...
What if I want to share three screens?
Well, I imagine sharing two is the hard one, and sharing three is easy after that, right?
I think you actually can now. I think we've done it actually accidentally when I actually leave my...
Yeah, they
do
like,
you guys want to see my Slack messages for a little bit?
Nope.
No, you don't actually. You're right.
I got enough of my own, thanks.
Yeah. But yeah, and yeah, so you socialize all these young people into it, and then they think that's just the way, right?
Right.
Without an intentional training methodology around, like, yeah, if you really want an outcome of like a senior person, but... You know,
yeah.
Nonetheless, that's disappointment-driven development, indeed.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, experience. You know, it's hard to get. You have to be there for it.
Yeah, yeah. I have to keep sitting here working the board.
That's the truth, though, man. Like, there's just so much stuff, and people get really frustrated about that when, particularly as someone who is responsible for folks' career progression, being the person who goes and advocates for a promotion to like, hey, you're a senior developer now. Like, some people can just get real frustrated when I'm just like, you're doing a great job. You're just not ready to be a senior yet. And I'm just like, I'm doing all the things you're telling me to. And I'm like, yes, you are.
Now do it for two more years.
But the paint's got to dry. We got to let the paint dry.
Exactly.
You haven't seen enough. Yeah. You don't have enough scars. You'll get there. But you've just got to sit for a while. And like, unfortunately, tech is really bad about enabling people to be like, well, that person's gonna give me a bag and the title I want, so I'm just gonna go over there.
Correct.
And then that's what they do.
Yep.
But yeah, that like
it's probably accelerated more too in the tech industry than other places.
I would wager so for sure. I just think of like if I return to the exoskeleton analogy.
I like that one.
It's kind of like we don't want to put fat dudes in these exoskeletons. But everyone's just like, wow, it's just the exoskeleton that's going to work for me. So it's fine. I just get in there and wham, wham, wham.
I can be Juggernaut.
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. You know what? If we can have Juggernaut, we can put a big.
You know, we all can't be Magneto, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
You got to know how to play chess for that to happen.
But I've definitely seen it really is a balance that only comes through experience, like Alan's saying, of being willing to like solve the hard problems. But also use the new tooling because everybody ends up kind of when they go out of balance, they're just like, it's crap if I didn't build it myself.
Exactly.
There's a library for everything.
That's the other side of that equation, right? Is that like, I don't use anything new.
Yep.
You know, you can't do that either.
Amish software engineers sitting there with one suspender on
and an abacus.
Yeah.
And,
I'm going to type this on a typewriter.
OCR,
scan it in to the server.
I almost want to put together a YouTube video or something where we do that. Like, can we write code with a typewriter?
We could absolutely do that.
Yeah, we could.
And we could sell that. And there's a bunch of nerds out there that would buy it.
Yeah.
And I would almost probably be one of those nerds.
Yeah.
I would be like, oh, I'm going to write my code on a typewriter
now. On the typewriter.
Yeah.
Fair. Yeah. That'd be awesome and you get the carriage in there somehow, so you actually have to.
Oh, like
do
a manual. Yeah, I'm with you.
You gotta do your own carriage return. Yeah,
but we gotta. But if we really want it to take over in the market, we gotta find why people are disappointed
with their current keyboard
why are you disappointed
solution?
With your current keyboard solution? And boom. Mm. Oh, that's what it is. It's just a giant mechanical keyboard that actually simultaneously types like a typewriter.
That's right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's what it is.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
And then just
man.
All right.
Mm.
We solve all the world's problems now.
Yeah. Yep, no, we gave someone a good idea to with their 3D printer out there.
Surely that's out there. Surely somebody has said like, I'm going to turn a typewriter into a mechanical keyboard.
I mean, there's got to be a steampunk nerd.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah, for sure.
The real question is,
hold my trilby. I'm going to make this thing real quick.
What's the YouTube channel name for that? Right. That's like, is it steampunk? Steampunk keyboard. I don't know.
Steampunk typewriter keyboard.
I don't know. No, how about?
Well, I love that steampunk has been added, and that is like essential part of it now.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. That and we. So the Amish steampunk. Keyboardist. That's what it
there
is.
You go.
That's the name of the YouTube
so
channel.
So when I thought I was clever years ago, mm-hmm. I thought about starting a blog called, I think, like the Luddite Developer.
Yep.
And I was just like, oh, look at me. I'm so clever. Yep. I know the word Luddite and I write software. And,
and I really like, know my etymology.
I love the word juxtaposition and Luddite and I'm going to blog about it. Thank God I didn't.
Man. Well, I remember gaining a social acceptance to a group of friends that thought that the next social networking was going to be a blog. Which blog one was it? I don't remember which one it was.
Zanga?
Yes.
Zanga. Oh, man. Zanga.
Like, okay, I'll join that. And then I was like,
"That's for
no one's actually doing anything.
That's for the Gen Xers and the elder millennials. They know about that Zanga life.
Yeah, they do.
Boy, I was a tortured Zanga soul. Yep. If you read my Zanga post, you'd be like, this freaking chotch. This nonsense thing, you know, he's this posting.
Another...
I was like, it's again, I don't have to explain my art to you.
That's right. This... I don't, I...
You I'm know... here and listen to Jeff Bugley and make a post about it. Jeff gets me.
Another
or did, or
one.
Would have, before he died, rest in peace.
Another icebreaker that I remember, that I would think would be a great one, right? Like, favorite MySpace memory.
Ooh.
How about that? Oh, because right? Mine comes up so clearly.
MySpace memory?
Yeah.
Was that a thing in MySpace, like a Facebook memory?
Oh, God, I didn't even think about that.
Or
no,
are you just saying, like, just saying, I remember MySpace.
I remember. Yeah. Okay. I remember MySpace and what I remember.
Facebook has ruined memories.
When we had memories, when we used to have memories before the machine synthesized
them.
Made
them
up for us.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez, that's sad. It's so sad.
We all hate ourselves now for a minute. All right.
We are,
yes,
we must be disappointed.
I forgot what a memory was.
The irony.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
My favorite.
It's so uncomfortable.
My favorite MySpace memory, a sentence I never thought I'd utter. Oh, boy.
Nice.
What is it, though, Joseph? What's the... Maybe it'll spark my favorite MySpace memory.
I doubt it. I did not like Regina Spektor at all. And a friend of mine.
Hard. This feels like such a hard pivot. My favorite. He's forgotten what memories actually mean. And he's just like stringing them together.
I didn't like Regina Spektor at all. And a friend of mine had added an app, which is really just a block of code, into MySpace that allowed her to play music. And she had the Regina Spektor song on there. And in trying to write a friendly, hey, how's it going? I heard the song and was like, this ain't that bad, actually. And I actually turned out liking Regina Spektor quite a bit. It was like one of those, I'm an actual flexible human being. I'm like, I hate the things because I hate things. Like, listen to it. And I was like, actually, I don't actually dismiss her songs. These are good. And I listened to them and I became a Regina Spektor fan.
Boy, look at that. They're, you know, technology. So
good memories. A lot of my memories are like that.
I've got a good MySpace memory.
Let's go for it.
Did you guys remember? So I was fortunate, air quotes, enough to be making music during the MySpace era. And for those who wouldn't know, like, you could buy tools that would allow you to get lots of MySpace friends. Basically, like, the early days of all the, like, ad campaigning kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the band
before they
in,
sold them to you. Right. Before the platform sold them
to
you.
Right, exactly. And so the band I was in, our frontman loved MySpace and thought this was it. This is how we're going to break it.
Yeah.
And he bought one of those things, and we had so many MySpace friends. And he would brag about it. And it got to where, like, he would bring it up. He'd be like, we got 700 new MySpace friends from Finland. And I'm just like, that's awesome. Do we have a show anywhere? No. Can we get to Finland to play for our 700 new friends?
Yeah,
in Finland?
To really spark the fire, you know? Yeah.
Then this is pointless. And he was convinced, like, it's going to happen. Eventually, we're going to get enough friends on MySpace that it's going to, like, we'll be there. And I'm just like, this is doing literally nothing for us.
Right.
Please tell me you're not spending like band money on whatever tool is making that number go up.
But didn't you actually go to Finland then?
Not with that band.
Oh, okay. Fair.
A different band. And it was not MySpace related.
Non-MySpace related. My geographic was not related to MySpace, which is fair. It wasn't in the days.
It's true.
Do you have a favorite MySpace memory, Alan?
Man, not really. It's also generalized.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
just right. Remember pasting CSS in there, you know? Yeah, this is the future.
Man, I remember.
I never customized my MySpace page.
I don't know that
you could take it too far, like with the, you could put a music player in there.
Yeah, that's offensive.
You know? Yeah, yeah. Because it was like.
Auto-load, always play. I heard the first three chords of that song 35 times.
Yeah, you could shove that in like the about me. Instead of about me, you just listen about me. That's what was fun about it. Like, that's kind of what I remember about MySpace was like you'd have an about me and then you could just hack it and be like, no, it's a music player now.
Yeah.
Did anyone ever, like, now I'm sure someone did this, but now I wish I would have visited or at least remember visiting someone's page where it was just them talking when you hit it. It was just like, hi there. My name is Joseph Clifton.
Somebody had to have done that.
Let me tell you a little about myself.
Right.
Welcome to my space.
It's my space.
Shut the computer off.
Speaking of which, so like we say that, right? We say, I'm sure someone did it, right? Mm-hmm. We're always so sure of that now.
Yeah.
These days, we're always so sure of that because of our access to information. It's an interesting dichotomy, isn't it? That because of our access to information, we know we now believe that none of our thoughts are actually that original.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Our ignorance before made us believe that they were much more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
That, being informed has made us very aware that.
Man, I remember my high school English teacher had a profound effect on me in like telling me some stuff like that of like, your problem is you think every thought you have is original.
Yep. Yep.
Now it's. Probably said something really rude and
offensive
and
that you thought was very original.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Yeah, exactly. That's what stuck with me enough that I've been I got adulted that day.
I'll reference again another thing that I've been thinking about these things. It's just really impactful. Man, SLC Punk, one of the most impactful movies in the world to me as a young person. That's the Matthew Lillard.
Yeah.
Oh,
because he gets to the end and he's like, yeah, I'm a tool, but I'm not really a tool. I learned life and that's why I do this thing. It's just a decision I made. And I was like, what? People don't just become tools just because they're tools. They actually just make a decision to do that because that might actually be a good decision. Like, I'm going to test this theory out and see what it's like to just be a responsible adult. I wonder. Maybe anarchy isn't for me. Wild.
I did the same thing as a musician.
Yeah.
I was just like, I can't have a job and play music. What kind of sellout is that?
Right.
Like, I can have a bad job, sure, but I can't have like a good job
right.
with like, benefits and play music.
Yeah, you wouldn't like your music.
That's when I'm a tool. That's right. That's right. Now I'm relying on my job for my income instead of my music.
That's
right. Like, I can just enjoy making music and have a comfortable living. That doesn't sound as terrible as for some reason it used to sound.
Boy, I hear you on that one. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
We might have lost literally everyone under the age of like 30.
Was it the SLC Punk reference?
No. I mean, we might have just lost them with our ramblings on like adult life. The 30-year-olds, everyone under 30 is like, oh, those guys are crazy. We don't do it. We don't play that game that way.
Well, that's the thing, though. We all think we're adults the whole time, right? That's the whole point, even when we're kids, right?
Yeah. I was about to say, my 14-year-old thinks he's an adult.
Yeah.
He has had to learn the hard way that he is not.
Not.
It has taken a long time for him to learn that lesson, and he's still learning it, but he's more aware of his non-adulthood.
I can think of many stories that you and I have in common where we both were learning that same thing at 25. So,
he's
probably got a leg up on us.
Yep. And now we'll go into dad talk. That's one of the few things that, like, bring. I don't. That sounds really defeated and weird. I'm not going to say it. But one of the things that I do recognize and appreciate about some of the difficulties we've had with my son and his thinking himself an adult is just like, hey, you're getting the stupid out now instead of like the moment you move out of the house.
Yeah.
I like that. It means I got to deal with it a lot more than I would if you were in your own apartment living off of like Cheetos and working at a gas station. But
yeah,
at least you're not going to ever go do that now.
Yep.
That's cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
yeah. It's
good to get that stuff out. You know, the younger, the better, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a tipping point where it's just like, okay, this is too
young. Yeah, balance. Everything's a balance. Yeah.
All right. Dad talk over. Sorry.
Yep. Well, you know, I guess tech is not necessarily all disappointment. I guess that's the redeeming.
I like that you ask it with a question there, and that's like it's not really always disappointing.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
We did get a good name in there around the.
I think
disappointment driven development.
Yeah.
I think but that's where I would say like disappointment drives decisions far beyond tech. It's just one where technology is a place where we can see it. Because we have the ability to build almost anything.
Mm. Right. Well, we see it and we see the full cycle of it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. That's like the definition of technology, right? Is that it cycles quickly. Mm. We iterate on it quickly. And so we actually see the cycle of those decisions fairly quickly.
And it's built comparatively. And like move fast, break stuff.
Exactly.
Like release. Like fail fast, all the speed, so much speed.
Right, versus manufacturing a vehicle.
That don't fail fast in manufacturing a car.
Yeah, you got to figure that out. I mean, that's, you know, Evan will talk about that a lot.
Higher stakes.
So, yeah.
Well, until there's computers in our cars.
We're getting there.
That's the scary bit, man.
It is.
That's where it's just like, why are we combining these industries?
I see the cutoff, though, like I'm hoping, like, basically my retirement comes into when software is making decisions for human beings that the government has to come in and regulate and all that fun stuff, you know?
We're
like,
close.
Like an electrician or something. Yeah. We're real close.
That's where, to go back into being old men, Uncle Bob in his talk, like all basically any talk that Uncle Bob does these days is just like, we need to regulate ourselves or the government's going to come regulate us.
Yep.
Because somebody's going to crash a plane and it's going to be because we didn't write a unit test to cover that method.
Yep.
And it's just like, ooh, that's an uncomfortable truth.
It is an uncomfortable truth.
An inconvenient one, if you will.
Indeed.
Oh, yikes. Somebody's too influenced by that election year.
Was that a confession? Was that like the most meager confession back there?
I may have voted for Al Gore.
Oh my God! No, jeez. That was the last year that I was, or that was the last year that I would be an adult enough that I could understand what was happening and not be able to vote. I was like, I'm not able to vote now. I will next time.
Were you like frustrated that you couldn't vote in that election?
Yeah, I mean, it was important in that one, right? So. There's some people may say that some of the later elections it may have been more important to
vote. It's always the more recent ones seem more important.
Doesn't it? Yeah. Oh, man. Are we failing quickly there as well? Let's just move on.
Clearly we're not. Clearly we haven't. Someone said, ship that code again. It didn't. The server's still running. Someone needs to redeploy that code. And we're just like, do you remember when it ate the database? It's just like, yeah, but we restored it. We found a backup. We're fine. Put the code back out.
Tap server CI. Get it back out there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bit meta. We can call this one meta disappointment driven development instead. All right. I think we got to wrap this guy down.
Yeah.
All right.
And let's say, Tyrell, thanks for visiting.
Yeah.
Appreciate the time.
Always good to be here.
For coming up here. Let's go out and see if we can get stuck behind a parade.
That's a Christmas parade.
Go get some candy.
Yeah. All right. See you all soon. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to Friday Afternoon Deploy, recorded and produced by the team at Lofty in Fayetteville, Arkansas. For show notes from today's show, past episodes, and links to our Patreon and merch store, visit friday.hirelofty.com. If you'd like to reach out to the show, or if you're local to the Northwest Arkansas area and you'd like to be a guest in person on the show, email us at podcast@hirelofty.com. That's podcast@hirelofty.com.